Welcome back, folks. So we're going to move on this hour. And at a certain point, you know, it really doesn't matter whether it's on purpose or out of stupidity. It's the same thing happening in every single country at every single level. At a certain point, it doesn't matter what the motivation. The motivation of the Muslims is because they're getting stuff and they're gaining stuff. Yet they're allied with the hardcore feminists. I don't really care why, how they justify it internally. It's the same motivation, ubiquitous across the entire Western world. And it is suicidal and it is killing us. And it is this combination of the, you know, dodo bird moron idiots that are just allowing themselves to be killed and the vipers and the wolves and the hawks that are just mercilessly taking advantage of the ignorance, naivety, and complicity of the Europeans. It's horrifying. And when I say Europeans, I don't mean people in Europe. I mean people of European ancestry, because the exact same thing is happening in Australia and New Zealand and Canada and Greenland and America and everywhere else in the entire world where you can find white people. So have you seen South Africa lately? So we could talk about that. I could spend the whole show on that. I got a video of Julius Malema, head of the EFF, high guy up in, you know, South African politics. He's saying they still need reparations. It's been 30 years of black rule. The country is in a state of precipitous collapse, and they're saying we need more because we still are owed more because it's still not enough. It'll never be enough, folks. So I want to go to this video. This is Cape Cod Concerned Citizens posted this. Legal Citizens First. The Barnsdale County Assembly of Delegates met yesterday to discuss illegal immigration and legal immigration. Here's an absolute patriot standing up against them. Let's watch.
First, and then the gentleman in the blue shirt. And would you please tell us your name and what community you're from?
Yes, my name is Andrew DeRogers. I'm born and raised on Cape Cod. I appreciate that many people here have different points of view, and that's fine. Many of them are very well spoken. Many of them are polite. I'm not going to be. I am that taxpayer that several of the people who sat up here and spoke are talking about. What is on the line is very simple. It is a declaration of your allegiance either to the American citizen, the legal taxpaying American citizen, or the chosen community of foreign nationals who have been trafficked into this country for purposes of census data, for purposes of seats, for purposes of power, and for purposes of taxes. I am sick to effing death of being lectured about compassion, about patience and understanding. I have lived here all my life, and I have been required for all 40 years of that life to obey the law and follow the rules. There will be no social security check for me when I can't work anymore. I have never once received any of the benefits that have been spoken of here. Nobody is beating down my door to help me fix up my house so that it doesn't collapse on me or lower the cost of the electricity that I have to pay.
Right, folks, I'm going to interrupt it here because I went too long to throw to it. I got to play that full video. It's too good to cut off. I can't do the guy the disservice. I was going to say just tack on the full one when we upload it, but I got to show you the full thing. I got to give the guy his due because it's such a powerful speech and it's how everybody should be feeling right now. And the fact that it's Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard, like the most idyllic location in America since it was founded in the 1600s. Why are there any foreigners there? Like when I have guests over to my house, I don't give them the master bedroom and my car, right? Can we have some semblance of normalcy? Like, okay, you can come, but like you can't have the prime real estate in all the states in the union. Are we kidding? Why are we giving up our country? It's absurd.
This Memorial Day, honor freedom and save big at the alexjonesstore.com. Right now, get an additional 25% off already discounted products. Limited time, limited supply. Take action now.
Introducing the Gates of Hell Parasite Shirt. Inspired by the tick that turned barbecue lovers into cautious vegans overnight. Alpha Gal approved. Order now before the next helicopter drop.
Introducing the new 1776 wallet from the alexjonesstore.com. Now with enough room to hold receipts from groceries that somehow cost $500.
Don't wait any longer. Go to the website now. You'll be happy you did.
First, and then the gentleman in the blue shirt. And would you please tell us your name and what community you're from?
Yes, my name is Andrew DeRogers. I'm born and raised on Cape Cod. I appreciate that many people here have different points of view, and that's fine. Many of them are very well-spoken. Many of them are polite. I'm not going to be. I am that taxpayer that several of the people who sat up here and spoke are talking about. What is on the line is very simple. It is a declaration of your allegiance either to the American citizen, the legal taxpaying American citizen, or the chosen community of foreign nationals who have been trafficked into this country for purposes of census data, for purposes of seats, for purposes of power, and for purposes of taxes. I am sick to effing death, to death of being lectured about compassion, about patience and understanding. I have lived here all my life, and I have been required for all 40 years of that life to obey the law and follow the rules. There will be no Social Security check for me when I can't work anymore. I have never once received any of the benefits that have been spoken of here. Nobody is beating down my door to help me fix up my house so that it doesn't collapse on me or lower the cost of the electricity that I have to pay. I don't get health insurance. I can't afford it. But I am punished by this state for not being able to afford it so that people who are in this country illegally can benefit from it and go see the doctor whenever they want. And that is a fact. And I am sick of it. I am not an ununderstanding individual. I am not an uncompassionate individual. But my generosity has been abused and I am sick of it. I am sick of being treated as an indentured servant to foreign nationals in my country and in my community, and I don't give a damn whose feelings that hurts. So you can either approve this measure and show legal, law-abiding, tax-paying citizens that they do not matter to you, or you can reject it and show them that you are listening. Those are the only two options. And for the record, I traveled abroad to a foreign nation, and you would not believe the amount of documentation I was required to have on me at all times and show whenever anybody asked. And you can bet your ass if I broke their laws, they would have nailed my ass to the wall. And I was very well behaved over there, and I was very respectful to the people because I was a guest in their country. I wasn't due anything. Thank you.
So that's it. I mean, that's it. That's brilliant, brilliantly said. That's what we need more of. And that's the proper framing, right? He says, when I go to other countries, I behave myself. I comport myself with their laws. I comport myself with our laws in my own country. Why are foreigners given a free pass? They should be held to a higher level of scrutiny. And is all of this downstream of the lie of refugee asylum seeking status? Is that, do, because that just gets applied to everybody. Now, every immigrant is just de facto a refugee, an asylum seeker. None of them deserve asylum. None of them are refugees. None of them. Not a single one. There are laws dictating who is and is not a legal refugee or legal asylum seeker. The Biden administration just circumvented that and just said, well, as long as you're applying, then we have to let you in. It shouldn't exist. It shouldn't be a thing. It was only implemented, supposed to be temporarily. And this is the thing about, like, everything that we're facing now are either just laws that aren't being enforced, like every law about requiring immigrants to actually be loyal to the country and not support socialism and not support communism. We have laws on the books about that. They aren't enforced. Or total misuse of the laws, work around loopholism, where they're just, oh yeah, just say the magic word, say open sesame, and now you're an asylum seeker. Say, I fear for my life. Just like the UK got caught running a scheme where they were getting kickbacks for sending in migrants and telling them, say you're gay. Just say you're gay. They can't prove it. I mean, I saw a video. Should have grabbed it. I never grabbed it. But it was an Irish guy walking down the street and interviewing a guy. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm an asylum seeker. And they're like, really? From where? He's like, I think he said, like, Ethiopia. And they're like, well, why do you get asylum from Ethiopia? And he's like, well, I'm gay. I'm like, oh, you're gay. And he's like, yeah, yeah. Like, anybody come with you? Yeah, my wife and my kids. Oh, okay. We couldn't figure this scheme out earlier. So, of course, they're doing that same thing in America as well. And it's you would not treat other people this way. You would not go into other countries and break their laws. You would not demand entry to other countries. Why would you accept other people doing that? And that's why I do think it goes down to, like, the dodo bird mindset of good people, like that law-abiding Cape Cod citizen. And by the way, Cape Cod, it's a beautiful part of the country, but it has major problems too. It's like one of the biggest epicenters of, like, heroin overdoses and stuff. It's not, you know, because every place in the country will have lower classes, working classes, and the upper class. The bifurcation that is increasing means that the lower classes are just devolving into misery and drug addiction and disease and chaos. And the upper class is just shifting away and putting up fences and, you know, decreasing their proximity to the lower classes. So obviously that's just going to be the situation everywhere. And it's always lower class is going to be hurt by the illegal immigrants and the lower classes being addicted to drugs and, you know, unproductive is a symptom of a problem that should be fixed. They should get help. They should be the ones who receive the money or the assistance of the government. It is stolen from them and given to foreigners because it's about the ethnic replacement of white people. It's not complicated. It's not hard. And by the way, the reason why white people are being targeted is because white people have the history, the will, and the capability to stand up against tyranny. It's all about control at the end of the day. And the good, compliant white people who will go along or serve the enemy or, you know, proceed with the destruction are rewarded and uplifted and guaranteed a place in society. But anybody that's willing to stand up gets cut down. And it's not just Europeans alone. It's almost exclusively European. But Japan has been subjected to this as well. In the first 5 months of 2026, 9 major shrines, temples, and other religious centers have burned across Japan. 9 in 5 months. Places that have stood, in some cases, for over 1,000 years. Places that survived the saturation bombing campaigns of World War II. And this comes mere months after Japan first welcomed in its first shipment of tens of thousands of Bangladeshi Muslims. You think it's a coincidence? And of course, the agreement to allow in those Bangladeshi Muslims was facilitated by American corporate interests like Palantir and Miriam Adelson. Suga Shrine in Fukuoka. I'm not going to try to read all of these, but January 15th, February 13th, 7th, 20th, April 24th, and 27th, May 6th, May 16th, May 20th. So practically like clockwork, every week or every 2 weeks, a new shrine, sacred places that have stood for hundreds, some over 1,000 years, have been burned to ash. This person says, I'm not a politician, I'm not an activist, I'm just ordinary Japanese who loves this country. Every time I see another irreplaceable piece of our history and culture go up in flames, I feel a quiet fear. Japan was supposed to be the one place where this kind of thing never happened. When did our temples and shrines start burning one after another? It's a universal attack on humanity, folks. And it's not the Muslims alone, it's all of them. I mean, it's all of them. It's a consortium of the worst people. And if they'll use radical Muslims to do it, they'll do that. If you're more susceptible to, you know, just having your quality of your country degraded by, you know, importation of just actual workers, not necessarily violent people, they'll do it that way. They'll get you on climate change, like whatever. Whatever's your vulnerability, that's what they'll target. Doesn't matter to them. Doesn't matter what the reason is behind it. And this is what I mean, the dodo bird aspect, the learned helplessness aspect of it. It's utterly pernicious. And the only way to really fight back against it is to stand up like that guy from Cape Cod and just insist that you be respected and that your country be respected. Because if you don't, like, you're just an idiot. It's really not complicated. It's really not sophisticated. It really is that simple. You really do just have to treat your country like your home and your nation like your family. And everything becomes abundantly clear why all this is happening, or like how this is all happening. So like I said, Cape Cod, we have illegal immigrants in Cape Cod of all places. Why? Just why? Why are they there? Like, if you were designing things, you're like, hey, we got a bunch of immigrants. We can't reject them. We got to put them somewhere. Where are you going to put them? In America. You can put them anywhere in America. Are you going to put them in Cape Cod? You going to put them on Martha's Vineyard? You can put them on Catalina Island, right? Are you kidding me? Do you know we have endless fields of grass and sand that would love to have people on it? They can go there. That's what I mean. It's like, it's not just like, you know, if they're really asylum seekers, if the motivation was really like we have to help them because they're going to die if we don't, then fine, you can put them somewhere. It's like, hey, you know, the new suburb outside of Houston's better than anywhere they're from. Like, just put them there or wherever. But the fact that they're like, no, we're going to put them in the best places in America, it's on purpose. Like I said, I'll have guests over in my house. They can spend the night. They're not taking the master suite, right? Are you kidding? Why? You can be my best friends. I'm sleeping in my room. What are you talking about? Because the thing is, it's offensive for this to be, you know, subjected to it. Like, it should be offensive to all of us, the level of superiority and you know, the fact they feel like they deserve this stuff. You don't deserve anything. It is utterly infuriating to me. And as somebody who loves Cape Cod and has been there quite a bit, very sad. I'm very sad about the prospect of it going away, because it absolutely will. Because right now, it's a wonderful place, and it's beautiful, and it's quaint, and it's, you know, humble, and it's white, and it's all white people. And it's practically nothing but white people. That's an intrinsic part of it. You cannot, extricate that part of that. And it's actually one of the places, that place in Ipswich in Massachusetts. If you've ever read anything by Lovecraft, H.P. Lovecraft, he sets a lot of stuff in Ipswich. I have family in Ipswich. It's one of the most beautiful towns in America. And it was one of the places that it hit me for the first time probably 10 years ago. Because I was, you know, I was, yeah, probably like 25, 20, something like that. And it was one of the first places where I looked around and I was like, this place is amazing. My wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, was like, you know, I can't believe places like this exist. I remember for the first time being like, yeah, white people. Hell yeah, white people. This is awesome. And it's because white people built it. Because it's got the history. It's like you're walking over a bridge from the 1600s. And up until that point, you know, I'd been raised in America. I'd been raised as a 90s kid, watching freaking Sister to Sister and Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I'd never thought about race in my life. But then from Donald Trump, the 2016 election, the constant harping on race, even before that, the Black Lives Matter crap, the Trayvon Martin crap, the idea of race being, you know, pushed into your brain over and over and over and over again. And so you start to think about things in a racial paradigm, in a racial dimension. And when you start doing that, you start finding, as a white person, I look around places that I think are wonderful and love them a lot and go, huh, wonder if it's a coincidence that they're all places that are almost exclusively white people, or if that's just an accident. I've told the other story, being in Colorado, another place beautiful and white as the driven snow, at least it was for a while, where I had my non-white friend, I was talking to my non-white friend on the phone, walking around a public tennis court, and I'm talking to him on the phone, I'm going, there's just tennis rackets sitting out. I'm looking around going, I don't think these belong to anybody. I think the club just leaves $250 tennis rackets out on the rack. My friend is like, yeah, dude, it's because it's white people there. And this was even before then. This was before racial consciousness, when I had to have a non-white person tell me why things were so safe in Colorado. I didn't realize it at the time. So it's one of these things that you see these places and you just know their character is not going to survive. It's just not. Because for one thing, the white people are obsessed with making everybody else feel welcome. And so it's just like, you know, right now on Cape Cod, last time I was there, saw a very wonderful production of like a Shakespeare in the Park play. And you know that right now, the money that Cape Cod brings in is, yeah, there we go. We're doing it, folks. It is White Boy Summer. It's very much White Boy Summer. And we'll get into the Chud story here in just a second. That was our official kickoff of White Boy Summer. But all those, you know, the funds for, you know, our, you know, artistic endeavors that the city does. Again, if you go to Cape Cod, you'd understand, right? It's literally like craft fairs and Shakespeare in the Park and weekend is the bring your, you know, Labrador to the beach weekend or your golden retriever to the beach. And you see 1,000 golden retrievers running down the beach. You go, this is the whitest thing I've ever seen. And I say that with glowing pride. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. You ever seen Jaws? That takes place in Cape Cod. And so you know that what's going to happen to those, to the funds that are funding the little arts, you know, and crafts fairs that are all about antiques and, you know, the maritime culture of the old Cape Cod lobster boats. And like, what do you think is going to happen as that stuff starts to go, well, you know, we want to spend some of that, just a little bit of that money on the Sikh Street Festival this year. So we don't quite have enough for that other thing we used to do. And you know, it's only fair that the Afghans get a street festival of their own as well, right? We want to embrace multiculturalism. And multiculturalism crowds out culture. It drains it and destroys it. So it's a bummer. It's a bummer. Cape Cod is just not going to exist anymore in a little while. It already is getting bad. And the other thing is that it's not just that these places, these really, you know, nice historic places just happen to be where these things happen. I think they're targeted. What is this? I think it's Plymouth, right? Plymouth is the city where the Puritans landed, right? Where the Mayflower landed. I believe it's Plymouth now. The entire city is like a gay theme park. It was right. It was where did they land right before Plymouth? They landed somewhere. They were there for about 3 months, and then they went to Plymouth Rock. Maybe I'm mixing. Ask if is Plymouth gay. Ask if Plymouth is gay. That'll give you the answer. Provincetown. That's what I'm thinking of. They call it P-Town, Provincetown. And it's literally, it's like a gay theme park. It's like the whole city is gay. And there's something very insidious about it. For one thing, because you've got right in the middle of the city, this giant memorial to the Puritans. Left England, left the Netherlands, came to start a new heaven on earth in America where the church was the state. And for years, citizenship wasn't even a concept. It was membership of a church, of a congregation. Yeah. Provincetown, the gayest town in America. That happens to be where the gay culture congregates. Just happens to be at a spot of sort of sacred puritanical history. Just happens to arrive there. And especially with the gay stuff, I find it particularly insidious because of the innocence with which it is put forward. Like you go to Provincetown and it's like a typical beach town, and you'll have like, oh, the old timey candy store. And it's like, okay, you go into the old timey candy store and sure, it'll have rainbows and it'll have, you know, everyone accepted signs, but it'll also have like leather thongs hanging on the wall. It'll also have like dildos on shelves. And you're just like, why are they acting like this is innocent? Like, it's this weird, like, yeah, this is probably, that memorial is amazing. It's this beautiful memorial right in the center of town to the pilgrims, to the Puritans, to the risks they took, to the sacrifices that they experienced, to the brutality that they withstood to carve out a little, you know, church kingdom on the rocky shores of New England. And now it has become a giant gay parade all day, every day. They literally do this every day. And again, they treat it as if it's like, oh, it's like a fun, like innocent thing. And it's like, if it was innocent, why are there masks? Why are there handcuffs and masks and leather thongs on display? There's nothing innocent about this. There's something like very disturbing. So I don't think it's a coincidence that these places are being targeted. I think they're targeted as a symbol, as a signal, as a act of conquering, as an act of humiliation and submission to their worldview, which is against ours and at odds with ours. And this, to me, again, the saddest thing in the world is seeing like the normally pretty conservative boomer people just being like, it's so fun. This place is so gay. And it's like, I have to shield my kids' eyes from the stuff they're displaying in the store. This is disgusting. Yeah, we got a bad idea. This is what I mean. I don't know what we're going to do, folks. I don't know what we're going to do about this country, about this world, about the people. They're supposed to be on our side. They're supposed to be our brethren. They're supposed to be our countrymen that are just reveling. It's an orgy of destruction. They are dancing their way off a cliff. They're following the Pied Piper, and they're calling us idiots and bigots for just recognizing the symptoms of a collapsed, decaying society like Sodom.
Most all the products you see at the AlexJonesStore.com that fund this operation and keep us on air are products that I use, that I like, that are ideas that I came up with. The knives we have, the supplements, the coins, these new Faraday cage, RFID, wallet shields. That's all stuff that I went out, I researched, that I thought was cool, that I then got Bigley to go out and get. And it took them 6 months, which was actually pretty fast, to get the very wallet that I bought at a nice department store for like $75, $80 six, 7 months ago and really liked, because it holds 20 cards, 20 bills. It is high quality leather and very lightweight, very strong aluminum. This is the wallet for you, folks. It's amazing. We have them two designs, 1776, and Don't Tread on Me. Comes in a nice box. Also is a great gift. The new Freedom Shield wallet. The new Freedom Shield RFID wallet is here. It comes in two powerful patriotic designs, Don't Tread on Me and 1776 with a Ring of Stars. Made with top grain leather and aerospace grade aluminum, this thing is slim, strong, secure, and built for everyday carry for the last years. It holds up to 25 cards and 20 bills, has RFID blocking protection, and secure cash strap and quick pull tab access. And let me explain this. I know most of you know this, but for those who don't, thieves and criminals and people that corrupt gas stations and places, they don't just put a fake card reader, it's a real card reader, under the reader so that they're getting your information and then selling it and, you know, stealing your identity. They also can scan with just a device that can be in a briefcase or even a small bag. They can scan your cards and get their information off of the chips. Okay? And so that's why spies, law enforcement, you name it, for many, many years, spies for decades, but law enforcement, everybody else, accountants, you name it, they all have wallets like this. And we're going to come up with a bunch of other great Faraday purses and wallets and bags, because that's something people really want. My marketing research was, I think it's cool, I'm into it. And sure enough, the Faraday bags, we've got limited supplies of, sell out within days. These are going to sell out very, very quickly as well. I'm cutting this live on air on Wednesday, May 20th, 2026. I would imagine the limited run they got, just 1,000 of each one of the two designs, will probably be sold out in less than a week. So get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com and fund the operation. They also make a great gift. So I paid upwards of $80 for the one I got and I love. Well, the regular price for these is $69.99, but today, right now in the sale, it's $49. And for VIPs, it's $10 less, $39.20. Now, that's why everybody wants to be a VIP. $30 a month, just like Amazon, you know, Prime, you're Prime member. You instantly get $40 to spend in the store, special deals, special offers, and sales on top of every item on top of the sales. If you're buying anything, be a VIP. And it's not a commitment because it's in your profile. You can one click, unsubscribe anytime you want. Okay, so it is so simple. But then you get all the special deals, the special offers, and then you get the special emails and things, and it reminds you of the great work we're doing. Because I want a long-term relationship with you. I want you to enjoy the products we have. We got a big buy one, get one free sale that ends tomorrow. Flash sale, massive. Buy one T3 iodine tincture, the very best, get another one free. World's Methylene Blue, the very strongest, get one, buy one free. Or mix and match, buy one or the other, get the other free. At thealexjonesstore.com. But while supplies last, get your new Freedom Shield wallet. I know it's going to sell out quick. It's a great product, and thanks for your support. Thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Folks, the Memorial Day celebration in 1976. This is what America was like. We sure have progressed, haven't we? Sure looks a bit different. I mean, everybody gets this was better, right? It was better back then. Like, everybody can see that. It's not exactly complicated. How did we get away from this? Where did it go? Was it capitalism? Did capitalism do it? Because this is a commercial for the largest corporation in the world, Coca-Cola. I don't think it was capitalism that did this to us. Was it racism? Was it white people being too racist? Is that what happened? We got more racist over time. There you go. A little compare and contrast. 1976 to 2026. Gee, what's gone on? What's happened to us? I mean, can anybody seriously watch that parade from 1976 and just be like, blech, ugh, I hate it? You're lying. You're lying or you're jealous. It's the only answer. And I saw people actually yesterday, because I'm not kidding. I love this wallet. I love this wallet. And I literally was just like, I took a picture of it because I was just like, this is so cool. And I posted it online. And I had people say, you know, who cares about 1776? Who cares about America? It's lost. And I hear that sentiment going around. That sentiment only exists on the internet, first of all. And it's the symptom of a life lived in a closet. Not because they're gay, but because they don't go outside. They don't talk to people. They don't go to events. It still exists. I'm not trying to black pill here. Talking about Cape Cod, one of the biggest white pills in the world is going to a Cape Cod Little League baseball game a couple years ago. There, because it straight up felt like I was transported back to 1776 or 1976 rather. Just total patriotism, red, white, and blue, kids running around. It was beautiful. It was amazing. And I had people comment on that saying, basically, America's dead. I haven't heard Nick Fuentes saying this. The Republic is dead. You know, get over it. And he's talking about moving to an empire, which I don't necessarily totally disagree with, considering the fact that we do not have a republic right now. We have degenerated into democracy of the worst form, and we got to do something to get back on track. Regardless, 1776 is about the promise of America. It's about what America was meant to be and what it's going to take to get us back there. And if you want to never get back there, then believe that we'll never get back there. This is a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you want it, you'll get it, is how this works. If you want to fight for America, if you want to reestablish our values, if you want to reclaim our homeland, then that's what we got to do. If you want to believe it's over, then it is. And that's how it works. And the promise of America is beautiful and was beautiful and remained beautiful for a very long time. And it's really only been in this last 50 years, since 1976, thereabouts, that things have gone completely off the rails, completely downhill, and it's not a mystery as to why. It's liberalism, it's white guilt, it's racial grievances and racial politics, it's exploitation by foreign powers, it's law upon law upon law being piled on top to solve a problem that laws created in the first place. It's an abandonment of the values that built our country in the first place as well. And it's no wonder that we're in a state of abject collapse. But also, don't forget, and I know this is a little bit boomer coded, I'll admit, but especially when you are reading about what's going on in Israel, what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on literally everywhere else that's not first world. And this country is still truly amazing, truly incredible. And we do sort of get used to it. There is this normalization that occurs where you take for granted the fact that you're not having leaflets dropped on you at 1 a.m. saying, gather what you can and flee, you have 30 minutes before your house explodes. And that's the lucky ones, right? The unlucky ones simply wake up to a ringing in their ears and their entire family's dead. The real unlucky ones get killed in the rubble, buried there as they die slowly over days. And anybody tries to come to rescue you, get sniped by the Israelis. There are a lot worse places to be in this world. You could be in Mexico, where if you cross the wrong gangster, you're going to end up decapitated hanging over a telephone pole. I understand that people are blackpilled about the direction America's going. I understand they're blackpilled about the condition America's currently in, because if you took anybody from the 50s or the 60s or the 70s and brought them to 2026, I mean, it's a dystopian hell world. It would feel like some sort of sci-fi movie about the follies of man and how to, you know, the dire consequences of everything we've experienced over the last several decades. We're in the state of collapse. I'm not you know, overly optimistic about any of that. However, the hopelessness, the beating you down, the making you discredit or hate your history, because that's really what's going on here, is people are being taught basically America as it exists now was inevitable. So really the founding fathers were basically dumb to start this in the first place. That's the implication, right, of being an American, being a supposed patriot, you know, being a white Christian European and like wanting to fight for that, and then going, but the founding fathers are stupid. It's stupid to celebrate 1776. You're completely off the mark. You've gone totally wrong somewhere. That's our history. It's real. It's what gave us everything that we currently have. We should honor it and uplift it and view it through a deliberately optimistic lens. We've talked about it a lot before. George Washington cut down the cherry tree. That's a fact. I don't care if it's true or not. It's a fact, and you have to believe it. George Washington cut down a cherry tree to try out his new axe as a child. When his father got mad, he didn't hesitate. He stood up and said, "I chopped down that cherry tree." And that's true. It's an absolute fact. And you have to believe that if you're an American. That's my perspective. These are the myths that define our character. What do you think the Israeli version of that story would be? George Washington chops down the cherry tree and then sells his dad the wood. Denies it. Blames it on the slave kid. I don't know. They don't have the same character we do, though. They didn't go out of their way to define themselves and their nation on the promise of honesty, even unto self-sacrifice. Not such a thing in that culture. So I don't know what you're trying to build, but if it's at odds with George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, I don't want anything to do with it. Everything that we're pursuing here was embodied by those guys who created a brilliant and amazing form of government that has been systematically destroyed over 250 years. And the thing is, they knew that and they put in solutions for that, and we didn't take them. We didn't follow them. We didn't do what we were supposed to. You know, Thomas Jefferson said, like, every 20 years, they'd have to remake the government. That was their intention. And in this bizarre inversion of what was intended was that sort of our morals and our character and our nationhood would remain consistent, more or less. It would maybe slowly change, but remain consistent. But as modernity brought new technology and developments and more people and new forms were necessary, then the idea was that we could reform our government into a new structure to continue our traditional morality in whatever new form the future required. We've done the opposite, where we have retained the form of government, like breaking these laws is the worst thing in the world. Like changing the rules by which we play the board game called government is just anathema. We can't possibly do anything like that. We have to do it incrementally by, you know, writing laws that are filled with pork and never get passed in the way they're supposed to. It's ridiculous. It's completely a misfit. So we've kept the form of government, but our morality has completely inverted and been deliberately changed. Again, the best symbol of this process that's occurred is the plaque on the Statue of Liberty, right? The Statue of Liberty, given to America by France, not the government of France, the government of America, but the people of France who paid out of their own pocket to fund the statue, and then people in America paid out of our own pocket to build the base of the statue. They build the statue. The purpose of the statue is shining out. It's shining out into the harbor. It's the American liberty facing France and shining her torch and leading the way. It is an outward projecting sentiment that the Statue of Liberty is expressing. Then all of a sudden, an activist, a Jewish woman who I guess was thankful to America for rescuing her from the Nazis or whatever pogrom it was when she came over. I think it was earlier than that, right? It was the late 1800s. She comes over and puts a plaque on it and completely inverts the symbolism. Now, instead of being a symbol of projecting our values outward into the world, it becomes a symbol of welcoming the world into America to live the life that they want to and the way that they want to. It is a literal 180-degree inversion of the intended symbolism, and yet the vast 99.9% of Americans have no idea and think that the Statue of Liberty was always intended as a welcoming symbol, welcoming migrants in to New York Harbor. So just take that in symbolic form, and it's everything. There was a deliberate redefinition of what America meant, and it mostly happened around the 1960s. When instead of a nation, a European nation of pioneers and founders, you know, going out in the wilderness and building something to prove that human liberty is possible and human beings are capable of living without tyrannical instruction, and it inverted it into a safe harbor for all of the world's detritus. Great. Great. In the 60s, obviously, this was in service of progressing the civil rights movement. And I'll explain this a few times, but it's worth revisiting because, again, the question is, why are people like this? Why is America like this? Why is Europe like this? Why are we like dodo birds? Why do we believe the scam artists aren't going to scam us? Why do we welcome people in who despise us? Why are we such fools and suckers and ignorant, naive children? Why is this happening? And the fact is, we've had it very, very good for a very long time, and it's a natural consequence of that, you know, the comfort that the boomers felt, the, you know, safeness that they felt. It was sort of a form of white supremacy, of believing that your culture and your country could never really be at threat. But it's also really at the heart of it, it is actually our liberalism. It actually makes perfect sense because it actually is sort of the willingness of Western culture to change, to evolve, to migrate when necessary to a newer form. It's pretty unique in Western culture, right? You can think about Japan being basically exactly the same for thousands of years until they saw how great the Europeans were at doing things and went, all right, we're going to open up so you guys can come tell us how to build industry. And so they did, and they did an amazing job. But China was the same way, right? Sort of rigid, sort of stuck in the same form for thousands of years. No, you know, major developments. Islam, of course, there are still people living in the way they did in the 1300s. It's never really developed in terms of like human rights and women's rights and all this sort of stuff. Now we look at this stuff as suspect because it's gone so far. But the thing is, that's because it's a vulnerability that's taken advantage of by bad actors, and we don't have the immune system to detect and defend against that. So because our society is not rigid, is not calcified, is able to absorb and incorporate new developments, it means that we're constantly going through a process of evolution. And when certain vulnerabilities are opened up, bad people come in and try to accelerate the transformation faster than it's naturally going. And it makes everything completely and objectively worse. You can see this with feminism, and you can see this with the civil rights movement. You can see it with a lot of movements throughout American history where, for feminism especially, it was mostly a matter of technology and of like civilizational technology that allowed women to not be required to be housewives, right? Taking care of a house, it's a hell of a lot of work, especially if you're washing clothes by hand, right? The washing machine literally freed up like hours a day for women. And it's not like it was optional. It's not like, you know, the husbands out there were just like, I'm going to make my wife wash clothes all day because I don't want her going outside. Well, it was a communal activity anyway, so that doesn't even. But the point was, like, if you didn't have a wife there constantly upkeeping things, you had disease, you had rats, you had filth. Like, it could get really bad. And it's like, it's really shocking how recent it was that we like got out of that mode. You can, I was looking through an old National Geographic magazine from either the 50s or the 60s. And it was amazing to me because all of the ads for all of the locations, like there's an ad for a mall and there was an ad for a, you know, I don't know, new restaurant or something. And almost all of the ads included the terms clean and bright. Clean and bright, right? When was the last time you saw a location in America advertising their cleanliness and brightness, right? We take it for granted. Everywhere we go is clean and bright. It's wonderful. It's amazing. It's sparkly and beautiful. It was like, as you know, that was a selling point in the 50s and 60s. It's like, hey, everywhere you go is dingy and kind of dirty, but like we have a nice new clean and bright place to come see. Like the idea of the comfort level that we live in, it's like not that old. It's really not that old. So anyway, so you get all these developments in like the 40s, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, frees up women quite a bit. They're no longer, you know, tied to the household by necessity because of all of these, you know, wonderful inventions. It gives, you know, frees up time for women. Women are volunteering. Women are, you know, creating charity organizations, not so much in the professional world, but they are in the professional world as well. Certain women, like extraordinary ones, make their way into the corporate structure and are able to exist. There's no law against it in America. It just doesn't happen that much. But culturally, that starts to change. And again, there was no barrier to that. It's not like, you know, I mean, you had the suffragettes in like the, you know, 1910s. There was some resistance to that. Probably should have been more, to be honest with you. But they got their way. You know, it's not like there was a big, battle over that. I mean, they just sort of made some noise and we said, okay, fine. You know, it's all right. Enough already. Obviously, there's always going to be a little bit of pushback for big, major, you know, universal societal changes like that. But that's what we do. But we absorb those. But we change things to comport with the new reality. And that's fine. That's good. That's progress. That's how you move forward. That's how you innovate. But then you get people who come in and they go, it's not happening fast enough. They take this little bit of discomfort that's developed of women going, you know, I should be able to get a job like a man. You know, I'm just as qualified as that guy. Why am I not getting the job? There's a little discomfort there. And the society's changing, but it's changing incrementally and it's changing gradually and it's changing naturally until somebody comes along and goes, it's not happening fast enough. They take advantage of that discomfort, take advantage of that vulnerability. And they say what you need to be doing is burning your bras and taking the pill and rejecting everything about the patriarchy. And it devolves into first, second, now third wave feminism, which has destroyed everything. And I forgot about these stories. But there are two really good. Oh, man, I don't know where it is. Okay, here it is under my other stack. I'm glad I brought this up. This is where feminism has gotten to at this point. You gotta love this. This was posted by Chris Williamson at Chris Will X on X. He says, C.S. Lewis, the feminist, because C.S. Lewis has this quote, the homemaker is the ultimate career. All other careers exist for one purpose only, and that is to support the ultimate career. Homemaking, right? The mother, the homemaker. It's the ultimate career. All other careers exist for one purpose only, and that is to support homemakers. They think this makes them a feminist. This is the antithesis of modern feminism. This is Satan to feminism's God. What are you talking about? You think this is feminism? He's saying staying home and being a stay-at-home mother is the ultimate career and is what everybody should aspire to and is at the end of the day the only career that really matters. But you think this is feminism? Like, you're an idiot. You're off the rails. This is where it's gotten to. And I have another example also from today. 8 weeks of maternity leave isn't enough. Neither is 3 months, 6 months, or even a year. Attachment theory research shows that babies need their primary caregiver, most often mom, far longer than a few months, ideally for the first 3 years. Longer maternity leave leads to better mother-infant interactions, which results in more secure attachment at 24 months. Babies are so sensitive that even any baby-mother separation for more than a week under the age of 2 has been shown to predict higher child negativity at age 3 and higher aggression at both age 3 and age 5. You can never convince me anything about women working corporate jobs is natural. So you know what the obvious conclusion of that is that last sentence, women working corporate jobs is not natural. So they've gone from you have to let women in the workplace to you have to let women in the workplace, but they require maternity leave, to that maternity leave should be 3 years because babies who grow up without their mothers as constant companions suffer mental and physical and, you know, spiritual consequences later down the line. How about we just roll it back? How about we just undo all of this crap? Because obviously, and science proves it out every time it's tested, the traditional Western nuclear family is the best construction for raising a child, the best way for a society to produce healthy, productive, law-abiding, and happy people. And so feminists have spent 60 years tearing that down only to rediscover it and want to weirdly implement this half, you know, fixture where we're celebrating stay-at-home mothers while also trying to have them be corporate worker bees. It doesn't work, y'all. So whether it's, you know, race or feminism or anything else, it's because our countries are liberal. It's because our countries are open to changing and evolving and, you know, contending with new realities as they arrive. It opens us up to bad people taking advantage of the discomfort that that causes and, you know, basically screwing up the response. Whereas before, if we had allowed the process of women's liberation to take, you know, process and incrementally be allowed to happen, everything would probably be fine. Same thing with race. You know, black people were moving out of black neighborhoods. They were starting their own neighborhoods. You know, there was some friction. Black people were going, hey, we should be fully fledged citizens. We need to get rid of some of these Jim Crow laws that make us second-class citizens. We've earned it. We've shown that we're capable. And in come the people going, what you need is the government subsidies, and what you need is this, and what you need is that. And they take advantage of what is a natural, normal process of development of a liberal country, and they weaponize it, and they destroy it, and they take that vulnerability, and they put a knife through it. And that's what happens over and over and over. So I think that does go to explain sort of how we got to where we are now. It is liberalism at the end of the day that's opened us up to all of this. I'm so stupid. I'm just... The whole reason I played that parade at the beginning was to tell you about our Memorial Day sale. I didn't even tell you about our Memorial Day sale. I wanted to play the 1976 parade, and then I was going to say that was a Memorial Day parade, and now we have a Memorial Day sale at the Alex Jones...
We have a massive Memorial Day sale that runs through Monday, running right now. On top of all the sales... At thealexjonesstore.com, you get 25% off the top on top of every other sale that's there. That makes many items lost leaders, but they're so good. The Ultra Methylene Blue, the Ultra Methylene Red, the Incredible Bovine Colostrum, the Zeolite Spike Protein Chelation Detoxification System. It's all there. That means the deals are already marked down, but on top of it, you're getting an extra 25% off. So stock up now. This is the time to load up. This is the Memorial Day sale, and it will not last. It ends Monday at midnight going into Tuesday. And on top of it, we've got this day only. It ends at midnight tonight, this Friday. Massive flash buy one, get one free sale is extended till Monday as well. Buy one T3 trifecta iodine tincture and get one of the very same size absolutely free. Get the Ultra Methylene Blue tincture and get one free, or mix and match the two. So extend it until Monday. This is a bestseller. Both these are buy one, get one free, the very best iodine, the missing link, the very best methylene blue. Incredible. They synergistically work together. Buy one, get one free of the T3 or the methylene blue at thealexjonesstore.com. And on top of that, we are selling out of the new Freedom Shield wallets that are very, very popular, that are RFID and Faraday cage, hold 25 bills and 20 cards. Absolutely amazing. Limited edition with 1776 and or the other design. Don't tread on me. Those are about to sell out by this weekend. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And that funds this operation. And I salute you and thank you all for your support. And while you're on the site, it has the widest selection of Patriot apparel of every conceivable design and configuration. TheAlexJonesStore.com. You can also find the live feed of the show, the video and audio on the site as well. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Take action now to keep us on air.
Days. days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.